are we going? Sunny asked as they walked down the shaded path. The bush seemed to close in around them. Where it had been hot, it was now sweltering.
I told you, Chi-Chi said, to see Anatov.
Yeah, but who is he? She stopped walking.
Chi-Chi, Orlu, stop!
She hoisted up her purse, a closed umbrella under her arm. What's going on? Where are we going? What's happening? They both looked uncomfortable.
Anatov will explain, Sonny, Orlu finally said.
It's easier that way, Chi-Chi said. Just trust us.
Why?
Because we're your friends, Orlu said.
And we've changed your life.
Maybe, Chi-Chi said. Then she looked away.
Just let Anatov explain.
They started walking again.
Is he mean?
Sunny asked. The path had narrowed and they were walking single file, Sunny last. She heard Orlu laugh to himself.
Anatov is Anatov, Chi-Chi said, turning around and grinning.
Great, Sunny thought. Some friends. Not telling me a thing. For all she knew, they could have been accomplices working with Black Hat or Tokuto. Anything is possible. Even the worst is possible. The candle showed me so.
The worst was more than possible. The worst was inevitable. But she was in too deep now. Her parents didn't know where she was. She didn't even know where she was.
She slapped at a mosquito on her arm. Sunny heard it before she saw it. At first it sounded like a bunch of people softly whispering. Yet she saw nothing but forest. Minutes later, the noise grew to the sound of crashing water. It was a river so angry that its churning waters threw up a white mist.
Never heard of this river, she thought.
Stretching across it was a thin, slippery-looking wooden bridge. There were no handrails.
How is anyone supposed to cross that? She asked, horrified.
You just do it, Orlu said, stepping up to a large rock that sat in front of the bridge. He rubbed its smooth black surface with the palm of his hand. Beyond the mist is the entrance to Leopard Nox. She waited for him to go on.
The full name is Mbe Abum Oba. That's Efik for Leopard Nox's foot, Chi-Chi explained. Long ago, some Efik woman created a juju that stopped a leopard from attacking her. It made the leopard stub its foot on something hard, and the pain scared it away. The builders named Leopard Nox's foot after her strong juju. The Efik people have the strongest juju in the world.
In whose opinion? Not the Igbos, Orlu said irritably.
Sonny, there are leopard people all over the world from every tribe, race, whatever. None is better than the other.
Oh, be realistic, Chi-Chi said, rolling her eyes. But Sunny wasn't really listening. She couldn't take her eyes off of that narrow bridge. The wild waters beneath it boiled and churned.
Only truth will allow you across, Orlu said.
Every time, Chi-Chi added.
So you've crossed that? Sunny cried. It's so flimsy! The thing doesn't even look like it's...
She stopped talking and just stared at it.
Relax, Chi-Chi said, putting her arm around Sunny. We're not going over the bridge right now. We're going that way.
She pointed to a small path that ran to the right, beside the river. She pulled Sunny along.
I don't like this, Sunny said.
You're just not used to it, Orlu said.
No, she said, shaking her head. I don't like this. You're both crazy.
Chi-Chi giggled. Anata's hut was much bigger than Chi-Chi's. It was long with a thatch roof. The red walls were decorated with white symbols and caricatures of people. The wooden front doors were waist high and looked as if they swung in and out like the doors of a saloon in an American Western. They were painted with black and white squares. In swooping white letters, one door was labeled In, the other Out. She noticed that they entered through the outdoor. Inside, the air was heavy with incense so strong that it made her slightly ill. She waved her hand in front of her face. Through her watery eyes, she saw that the hut's inner walls were also decorated with white chalk artwork. A man sat in a throne-like chair on the far side of the room. When he stood up, she gasped. He was the tallest man she had ever seen, taller than any Maasai or American basketball player. He was light-skinned, with short brown bushy dreadlocks and a small gold ring in his left nostril. Sunny was trying to be polite when she stifled her sneeze, but the sneeze was so hard that she blew snot into her hands instead. Great first impression, she thought. Her face and hands were a mess. This girl isn't proper, Anatov told Chichi. He spoke in English and had an American accent. He turned to Olu and looked down his nose at him. Explain. I can barely stand to have so many ikbiri in here. Clutters up the vibe, know what I'm saying? But you bring an improper at that. Y'all don't think. Oga Anatov, this is Sunny Nwazwi, Chichi quickly said. We're sorry. Are you busy? Suddenly, Anatov strode over to Sunny, who was still holding her face. He frowned at her. What's wrong with you? He asked, switching to Ibo. I need a tissue. He pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and thrust it at her. To her further embarrassment, he watched intently as she wiped the snot from her hands and face and blew her nose. Yellow, he said when she was finally done. On all levels, she's yellow. I know I'm yellow, she snapped. I'm albino. Haven't you ever seen an... Quiet, Anatov said. Sit down, or I'll throw you out and make your life more miserable than it is. You have no idea what you've gotten yourself into.
Sunny, sit, Chichi hissed.
Fine, she said, sitting. Good, Anatov said. He walked a circle around her. Okay, he mumbled. He reached into his pocket and brought out a handful of white powder and started sifting it from his hand as he circled her again. This time he moved slowly. When he'd completed the powder circle, he brought out a knife. It had a handle with red jewels. The blade was shiny and very sharp-looking. Sunny glanced at Olu, who gave a small smile of encouragement. All she could think about was Black Hat. Anatov was too close for her to make a run for the door. Excuse me? She stammered. What are you...
You'll remember this for a long time, Anatov said with a chuckle.
She leaned away from him, her hand up as a shield, as he raised the sharp, shiny knife. She braced herself. But no blow came. He seemed to be drawing in the air. A soft red symbol, a circle with a cross in the center, floated above her head like smoke. Slowly, it descended on her.
Hold your breath, Chichi said, just as it touched her upturned face.
But before she could, she was pulled down, yanked like a rag doll. First through the hut's dirt floor, and then into sweet-smelling earth. As she was pulled downward, Sunny's mouth filled with earth. She couldn't scream. The earth was pushing its way down her throat, pulling up her eyelids, scratching her eyeballs, grating her clothes away and pressing at her skin. It got worse. Her skin went from cold to hot and then cold again, as if she were passing through various living and dead parts of the earth. Finally, she stopped descending and started moving slowly up. All was dark. She was glad. She didn't want to see where she was. Her entire body screamed with pain. How was she still alive? How was she still breathing? As she ascended, she heard a mulching, low, wet grumble. It grew louder. Suddenly, she burst into water. It had to be that terrible river. It was cold and turbulent, threatening to rip her apart. But she was moving too fast,
dragged up through whipping river debris and bubbles and underwater noise and currents. Then, just as suddenly as she was taken, splat! She was back in the hut. She inhaled incense-tinged air. She sneezed, but at least now she could breathe. She tasted gritty mud on her breath, and it coated her lips, throat, and nostrils. Several small but heavy things were dropping around her. They hit each other with their metallic chink, 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 chink.
"No, step back," she heard Anatov say.
He whispered a phrase, and then she felt something rough wrap itself around her body.
"Who'd have thought?" she heard Chi-Chi whisper.
Sunny decided to open her eyes. Her face felt tight and tingly. When she looked around, everything was deep, colorful, and almost too alive, like when they'd made the trust knot.
"What happened?" she mumbled and froze.
Her voice was deep and throaty, like some sultry, glamorous woman who smoked too many cigarettes. When she got up, her movements felt effortless, amazing, full of poise and grace. She stood up, her shoulders back and her head held straight and high. When she touched her face, it was with gently held arms and softly curved hands and lightly parted fingers, like a ballet dancer.
"Look at her," she heard Olu sigh. "I've never seen that kind before."
"Oh, and how many kinds have you seen?" she heard Chi-Chi snap. "Why don't you have some decency and turn away?"
When Sunny looked at them, she saw that Chi-Chi, who was looking away, had pink sparks jumping off of her, and Olu was dripping with almost invisible blue water. She didn't look at Anatov.
"Okay," she whispered. "Enough. Can this stop now?"
She felt whatever was holding her up shrink into her like it was a genie and she was the bottle. She staggered and sat down heavily on the floor. When she looked down, she was wearing some kind of dress made of light brown raffia. She touched her neck and was relieved to find that at least her gold necklace was still there. Her sandals were still on her feet, too.
"You passed! I knew it!"
Chi-Chi said, throwing her arms around Sunny and pulling her up.
"I knew I was right!
My clothes!" At least her voice was normal again.
"Where?" "Forget your clothes," Chi-Chi said. "You passed!"
Anatov came toward them, a wicker chair following of its own volition, like a faithful dog. He sat down.
"Orlu," Anatov said, "put the chittum in her purse."
She stared as Olu took her purse and scooped the handfuls of fist-size, horseshoe-shaped copper rods into it.
"Rare," Anatov said, still looking at her. "Just as it's rare for a pure Igbo girl to have skin and hair the color of washed-out paper, so it is for one to be a free agent."
"Neither of your parents, I assume?"
"What?"
she asked. "Are leopard people?"
I guess not," she said.
"Not that I know of."
"If you don't know, then they aren't. No mysterious aunts, uncles, grandparents."
"Well," she said. Her throat was sore, and she wanted to get the taste of dirt out of her mouth.
My grandmother on my mother's side was a little strange, I think. Maybe she was mentally ill. My mother won't talk about her much."
"Ah," he said. "And let me guess, she's passed on."
She nodded. "Some years ago."
"She looked like you?"
"No."
"Do you know her name, her true name, the name before she was married?" She shook her head.
"Hmm," he said. "In any case, you're what we call a free agent leopard person. You're in a leopard spirit line, somehow. It's not a blood thing. Leopard ability doesn't travel in the physical, though blood is familiar with spirit. It may have been through your grandmother, or she may have just been crazy. Who knows? It's known to happen once in a while, but rarely."
Most leopard people are like your friends here, born to two sorcerer parents, strong ancestor connections. They are the most powerful, usually. Those born to one parent can't do much of anything unless they have an especially expensive juju knife or something like that, or if they come from an especially adept mother. It travels strongest from woman to child, since she's the one who has the closest spiritual bond with the developing fetus. And to tell you what's just happened, you've been initiated. He paused. Do you use computers?
She blinked at the odd question. Then she nodded.
Of course you do, he said. Imagine that you are a computer that came with programs and applications already installed. In order to use them, they have to be activated. You have to, in a sense, wake them up. That's what initiation is. You were probably ready for initiation around when these two were, 2 years ago. You have anything odd happen to you recently?
Sunny's mouth went dry.
What happened?
He asked more intently.
It was a relief to tell him about what she had seen in the candle flame. But when she finished, she didn't like the look on Anatov's face.
Are you sure this is what you saw? He asked quietly.
She nodded. That's interesting.
Why don't you start from the beginning, Olga? Olu said. All you're doing is confusing her.
That's your job, Anatov said, annoyed. Teach her the rules, too. I expect you all back here in 4 nights. 12 midnight, sharp.
What? Sunny said. I can't.
You're now a leopard girl, Anatov said, getting up. Find a way.
Business completed, he turned to Olu and grinned.
Guess who arrived today?
Olu groaned. Already? Come on.
Your mother didn't remind you? Anatov said with a laugh. She, his mother Keisha, and I have been talking about it for a week. Maybe your mother wanted to surprise you.
I hate surprises, Olu mumbled. Chichi laughed.
If not for Sunny, we wouldn't have come today.
Things have a way of working themselves out, Anatov said. It's as I taught you. The world is bigger and more important than you.
Olu grunted.
So, Chichi asked, looking around. Where is he?
Who? Sunny asked, rubbing her forehead. She had a headache.
Sasha,
Anatov called.
A voice responded from somewhere outside. Anatov sucked his teeth, irritated. What are you doing? Get over here, he said in his American-accented English.
Sasha?
Chichi whispered to Sunny in Igbo.
What kind of name is that for a boy?
Sunny was tired and confused, but she couldn't help but giggle. It was a girly name. Still, the boy who entered the hut wasn't girly at all.
What took you so long? Anatov asked sternly in English.
I was taking a nap, Sasha said, blinking and rubbing his eyes. He too spoke with a strong American accent.
Still got jet lag, man.
He wiped his face with his hand. Sasha, meet Olu, Sunny, and Chichi, Anatov said formally.
Hey,
Sasha said coolly, thrusting his hands in his pockets.
So,
everything about him said America. His baggy jeans, his white t-shirt with a logo on the chest, and his super white Nike sneakers. He was tall and lanky like Sunny, and he had tightly cornrowed hair that extended into long braids that went past his neck, and a gold nose ring like Anatov's. Good afternoon, the three friends said together in English. His eyes fell on Sunny.
Sasha's from Chicago, Anatov said. He's been sent here to cool down.
In the meantime, he'll also be taught by and going through Mbakwa with me.
Did you just get here? Chichi asked.
Yeah, 3 days ago, Sasha said. My first time on a plane. Can't wait till I pass Indibu, so I'll never have to use a goddamn plane again.
What makes you so sure you'll pass Indubu? Chichi asked.
Watch me, he said.
Chichi seemed to like this response.
How do you like it here?
He shrugged and smiled.
It's cool,
he laughed to himself.
No, it's hot. Damn hot, but it's cool. I dig Leopard Knox. Wish we had a community central space like that in Chicago. Most of us are in what I consider hiding.
Oh, we hide here too, Chichi said. But we get by.
Or the Sasha Sings are already on their way to your parents. You're all free to go, he said, shooing them out. I've got things to do. I'll see y'all in 4 nights.
He paused and looked at Sunny. Then he smacked.
And take care of her.
We will, Olu said.
Of course, Chichi added.
Before Sunny knew it, Anatov had pushed them out through the inn door.
What's wrong with that guy?
She went to lean against a nearby tree, feeling nauseous, tired, and irritable. Not a good combination.
And why does he have those in and out signs if no one uses them?
To him, his hut is outside the average rubbish-filled welt, Olu said, looking back. Only with reluctance does he live.
Here, Sasha said,
reaching into his pocket and bringing out what looked like a fresh chewing stick.
Gnaw on this for a while. You'll feel better.
It was minty. She did feel better.
Thanks, she said.
Yeah, Sasha said. Man, I wish I'd have known. I've never seen an Ikbiri initiation on a free agent. I was half asleep outside when I heard you return.
Splat,
he laughed. It was loud like that?
Yep,
Sasha said,
like a load of rotten entrails dropping on the floor.
How come I'm dry now?
That's the way it works.
Chichi looked at Olu as if waiting for him to say something. When he didn't, she turned to Sasha and asked,
Are you ready to go?
Sasha cocked his head.
Why doesn't he ask me?
He said, looking at Olu.
He's the one I'll be living with.
Because I don't speak to dangerous people, Olu grumbled in Igbo.
Yo, what is your problem?
Olu turned to Sasha.
I know about you, he said in English, scowling at Sasha. My parents told me everything. Why would I want to live with someone like you?
Olu, Chichi said.
Sunny leaned back against the tree, chewing the mint stick. Olu scoffed.
Why don't you tell them why you're here? Give them some details.
Sasha thrust his hands deeper into his pockets.
Self-righteous African, he mumbled.
Troublemaking black American, Olu spat. Akata criminal.
Hey, Sunny said.
As if I don't know what that means, Sasha said, looking mildly annoyed.
As if I care, Olu said.
Both of you shut up, Chichi said. Ugh, this won't do. Sasha, what's your story? Just tell us.
Why should I? Sasha said.
Because we asked, Sunny said quietly, sitting down at the foot of the tree. Sasha paused, then sighed.
So you know, she continued, I was born in the States, too. I came back with my parents when I was 9. That's only 3 years ago.
She paused and looked meaningfully at Olu.
I may not talk about it much, but most days I feel very much like an Akata.
Olu looked at his feet, obviously ashamed.
Serves him right for being so thoughtless, Sunny thought.
Sasha seemed a little calmer.
Fine. Okay, like it matters.
He ran his hand over his cornrows.
I got into one too many fights at school. My parents were stupid enough to move into a neighborhood that was not only all white, but all lambs.
Lambs? She asked.
Folks with no juju, he said. There wasn't a sorcerer, healer, or seer for miles and miles. Anyway, so yeah, because of all that, and because I don't take crap from anybody,
I got into a lot of fights, and he added quickly, maybe I worked some stuff on some kids who were giving me problems.
Olu laughed scornfully. He set a masquerade on three boys in his class.
What?
Chichi exclaimed. They talked smack about my parents and were harassing my sisters, Sasha shouted.
You can't do that,
Chichi asked, impressed.
That's Indibu level juju.
Who cares what level, Olu said. He's Ekbiri like we are.
Man, there are books and I read them, Sasha said.
Plus, it was only a minor masquerade.
So?
Olu cried.
There are rules. And two of those boys are mentally messed up because of what you did. I heard my father on the phone talking to your father just after it happened.
Oh, well, Sasha said with a shrug. Shouldn't have disrespected my parents or touched my sisters.
Sasha hasn't mentioned that he also switched the minds of two police officers, Olu added.
They were harassing me and my friends, Sasha said. They were pushing around this girl I know, and they were abusing the power they were given.
Y'all don't know what it's like for a black man in the U.S., and y'all certainly don't know Chicago cops on the South Side. Here, everyone's black, so you don't have...
Oh, don't give me that, Olu said.
You rationalize everything. That's why your parents sent you here.
Enough, Sunny said. How are you two supposed to live together? Sasha, turn over a new leaf or something. It'll be easier if you and Olu try and be friends.
Sasha and Olu looked at each other and then away.
You'll feel better if you walk around some, Chichi said, helping Sunny up. Let's take her to Leopard Knox.
What?
Sunny said, nearly sinking down again.
Relax, Chichi said. You'll be fine.
Olu chuckled.
I checked it out yesterday, Sasha said, brightening up. My parents would love that place.
Chichi smiled.
Let's go then. While we get lunch, we can explain more things to Sunny.
Sunny tried to stand up straight and stumbled to the side.
No way. I'm not crossing that.
Here,
Chichi quickly said, pushing it into her hands.
Take your purse.
Uh-huh, Sunny exclaimed.
It's heavier.
You've got at least 100 chitim in there, I'd say. Maybe more, Olu said.
What's chitim? She asked.
Currency, Olu said. You earn it when you learn something. The bigger the knowledge, the more chitim. I didn't receive half as many chitim when I went through Ekbiri.
Ekbiri is level 1, Chichi explained.
She turned to Olu.
That's because you always knew what you were. Sunny's a free agent. She didn't know anything.
Even Sunny couldn't argue with that.
What are masquerades? From Fast Facts for Free Agents. Up to now, you've known masquerades to be mere symbolic manifestations of the ancestors or spirits. Men and boys dress up in elaborate cloth and raffia costumes and dance, jeer, or joke, depending on whom they are manifesting. Up to now, you've believed masquerades to be nothing more than myth, folklore, theater, and tradition. Now that you are a leopard person, know that your world has just become more real. Creatures are real. Ghosts, witches, demons, shapeshifters, and masquerades, all real. Masquerades are always dangerous. They can kill, steal your soul, take your mind, take your past, rewrite your future, bring the end of the world even. As a free agent, you will have nothing to do with the real thing. Otherwise, you face certain death. If you are smart, you will leave true masquerades up to those who know what to do with juju.
Chapter 4. Leopard knocks his foot. I thought today was supposed to be fun, Sunny mumbled when they got to the bridge. She tugged at her raffia dress. Ugh, this is so scratchy.
Would you rather have fun or learn the meaning of your life?
Chichi asked. There's no meaning to any of this.
I'll carry that across for you, Olu said, taking Sunny's heavy purse.
Thanks. He rubbed the smooth black stone buried at the bridge's beginning and stepped onto the bridge. As he walked, Sunny could have sworn that she saw something weird happen to his head. Her entire body went cold. Walking easily along the super narrow bridge, strolling casually, he soon disappeared in the mist. As Sasha followed Olu across the bridge, Chichi turned Sunny's head to her.
Focus on me, she said.
What happens when you cross? Sunny was glad Chichi wouldn't let her look. She suspected that if she watched Sasha, she'd see the weird thing happen to his head, too.
To cross the bridge, well, you need to know some things, Chichi said. We'll tell you everything once we get to Leopard Knox.
Where have I heard that before? Sunny said to herself.
But to her surprise, Chichi started telling her now.
Okay, as they said, lambs are people who have no juju. You were never a lamb, but you have to be initiated to become a functioning leopard person. That dress you're wearing is a dress for new initiates.
Did you have to be initiated? Sunny asked.
Yes, 2 years ago. But I've always known of my leopard inheritance, and I've always been able to do small things like make mosquitoes stay away, warm my bathwater, things like that. Initiation meant something different to me than to you. It's more a mark of beginning my life's journey. Yours was too, but it was also the actual beginning of your self. Every leopard person has two faces, a human face and a spirit face. I've always known my human and spirit face. When I was born, for the first week of my life, I wore my spirit face. My parents didn't know what my human face looked like until my 7th day of life.
She paused, looking at Sunny's shocked face.
Ah, relax, she snapped. It was the same with Olu, Sasha, all leopard people with pure inheritance. Anyway, the spirit face is more you than your physical face. It stays with you. It doesn't age. You can control it as it controls you. But it's impolite to show it in public. It's like being naked. I think it's because in this form, you cannot lie or hide anything. Lies are a thing of the physical world. They can't exist in the spirit world.
Sunny thought it all sounded like something a crazy old man would think. Imagine some inebriated old man shambling down the street, a bottle of palm wine in his hand, shouting,
"My face is no longer of this world, oh!"
Maybe Chichi, Olu, and Sasha were all on drugs. Chichi went on.
The bridge is a link. It's a patch of the spirit world that exists in the physical world. That's why Leopard Knox was built here. Leopard Knox is on an island conjured by the ancestors.
She shook her head.
Any of this making sense to you?
Sort of. Actually, Sunny thought Chichi was utterly insane. Chichi smiled.
So, to cross, you have to call up your spirit face.
She looked around. Sunny looked around too. They were alone.
I'll show you mine, Chichi whispered.
Okay, Sunny said, though she wasn't sure if she wanted to see it, especially if it was supposed to be like being naked.
Don't think I'll ever do this for you again either, Chichi said. And don't you ever dare tell Sasha or Olu what it looks like.
Sunny considered giving an even more cutting response, but then she realized that Chichi was dead serious.
Okay,
she said again. Chichi stepped back.
Right before Sunny's eyes, Chi-Chi's face melted, shifted, and morphed into something inhuman. Sunny stifled a scream. Chi-Chi's spirit face looked like a perfectly carved ceremonial mask. It was long, about the length of her forearm, and made of a hard, marble-like periwinkle substance. The two eyes were square indentations colored in with what looked like blue paint. Two white lines ran from the eyes to the sides of a pointy chin. The nose was long and outlined in white. The mouth was a large black grin. And it wasn't just her face that had changed. Her body language changed too. She was suddenly quick and precise.
"I am Igri," Chi-Chi said in a deep male voice. She laughed, doing a backflip.
Sunny stumbled away, startled by Chi-Chi's sudden flexibility and agility. Chi-Chi was always quick and on point, but now those qualities were exaggerated. The oddest thing was that Chi-Chi's spirit face still somehow looked like Chi-Chi. She did have a pointy chin and a long face.
She changed herself back, and for a moment, the girls just stared at each other.
"What's Igri?" Sunny asked.
"My spirit name."
"So I have my own spirit face too?"
"Yeah."
Sunny held the chewing stick Sasha had given her, and though it was all frayed, she put it in her mouth. She was glad it was still minty.
"So how do I..."
"Do you remember how you felt when Anatov brought you back?"
"Yeah," she said. "Like the best ballet dancer on earth."
Chi-Chi smiled.
"Wait a minute. You and Orlu and Anatov..."
"Yeah, we all saw," Chi-Chi said, looking guilty. "I only looked for a second before I turned away."
"But you said it's like being naked."
Chi-Chi smiled sheepishly.
"Yeah. Oh my goodness, I'm so embarrassed."
"Come on, we're your friends.
Look at all the stuff you said before you would even give me a peek of your spirit face. Yet there I was for everyone to see. It's like my butt was exposed."
"Different context," she said with a laugh. "And your spirit face is nothing like your butt."
"At least Sasha wasn't there," she mumbled.
"So, what did I look like?"
Chi-Chi gestured at Sunny's umbrella.
"It's funny. You know how you told me you need this when noon hits? Well, your spirit face looked...
you looked like the sun."
Sunny shrank back.
"What?"
Chi-Chi just shrugged.
"So you felt like a ballerina?"
Sunny blinked and then nodded.
"Yeah. All graceful and..."
She tapered off. "I've always loved ballet, but I can't do it."
"Okay. Well, here."
Chi-Chi reached into her pocket and took out a knife with a jade handle and a bronzed blade. She cut the air in front of Sunny and spoke some words. Sunny didn't understand, but she recognized them as a fique, the language and ethnic group of Chi-Chi's mother. Suddenly, classical music began playing. Right above Sunny's head, to her left, to her right, she couldn't tell where it was coming from. Sunny had always felt a strange, sometimes painful pull whenever she heard classical music. It was part of the reason she liked ballet so much. Now that feeling was stronger than ever.
"Concentrate on the ballet music and cross the bridge," Chi-Chi said quickly. "Your grace will protect you from falling, I think."
"You think?"
she asked. But something was taking her over. She could feel that tightening sensation on her face, a languidness in her body. She strode onto the bridge, disregarding its narrowness. She felt so good and confident that she laughed, thinking, "Man, this is going to be easy." With her peripheral vision, she could see golden points radiating from her face. Her spirit face had sun rays, too. She laughed again, feeling a wave of pleasure as the classical music hit a crescendo. She danced over the narrow bridge on her sandaled toes, once in a while doing leaps that took her dangerously close to the edge. She felt not an ounce of fear. Beneath, the water swirled, pounded, gushed, and thrashed. She watched it as she danced, glimpsing an enormous dark round face under the water. Whatever the creature was, the river's strength was nothing to it. It was watching her. She did a leap for the monster, a shen turn, and then a pirouette. She looked it in the eye, another laugh in her throat. Only a few feet away, the white mist swirled and gave way to the end of the bridge and whatever lay beyond it. Suddenly, her confidence wavered. The wind blew harder, and Leopard Knox opened up before her like the New York skyline. It was nowhere near as big, but it was grand. Huts stacked upon huts like hats at a hat shop. Not a European-style building in sight. All this was African. She quickly walked to the end of the bridge. When she got there, something possessed her to stretch herself into an arabesque. The music abruptly stopped. She felt her spirit face pull in, and she gasped, teetering on the bridge's slippery wood. Directly below, she saw something undulate. The river creature. She thrust out her arms to keep her balance. Ah! She shouted as she fell. Something tugged hard at her neck. Sasha had her by her gold necklace. He pulled her forward and she stumbled into his arms. As he held her, she looked back, tears in her eyes. Here, Sasha said, helping her to a nearby picnic table under a large iroko tree. Sir, you okay? Olu said, running over. She nodded. Thanks, Sasha.
Thank your necklace, he said.
What happened? Chichi said a minute later, after emerging from the mist. What do you think? Olu said. Oh, she said. The juju should have lasted longer than... Come on! The river beast can break that easy, Olu said. It probably waited until she was close to safety to make the fall to her death more dramatic.
One of these days, someone's going to get rid of that thing, Chichi said, kneeling before Sunny.
Sasha laughed and said,
Girl, please. Anatov told me that monster is older than time. It'll be here messing with shit long after we're all gone.
Sunny shivered, knowing they'd have to go back over the bridge to get home. It was already noon.
I'll cross that bridge when I get to it, she thought dryly.
As her heartbeat slowed, she took in her surroundings. So this was Leopard Knox. The entrance was flanked by two tall iroko trees. They were slowly shedding a constant shower of leaves, though their tops remained healthy and bushy. At the foot of each tree were small piles of leaves. Beyond was the strangest place Sunny had ever seen. She'd traveled to Jos in northern Nigeria to visit relatives. She'd been to Abuja, the capital of Nigeria, too. She'd been to Amsterdam, Rome, Brazzaville, Dubai. Her parents and her brothers were seasoned travelers, but this place was something else entirely. The buildings were made of thick gray clay and red mud with thatch roofs. They reminded her of Chichi's house, but more sophisticated. Almost all of them were quite large. Many had more than one story. Several had three or four. How clay and mud could stand up to this kind of use was beyond her. Every building was full of windows of various shapes and sizes. Large squares, circles, triangles. One building had a window shaped like a giant hat. All were decorated with white intricate drawings. Snakes, squiggles, deer, stars, circles, people, faces, fish. The list of things was infinite. Pink smoke billowed from the center of a large one-story hut. The buildings were crowded tightly together. Still, tall palm trees and bushes managed to grow between them, and a dirt road, packed with people, wound among the buildings. From somewhere nearby, up-tempo high-life music played. She turned around and saw more people emerging from the mist. She stepped closer to Chichi, feeling like an intruder. "Maybe I should just go home," she whispered. She thought about the monster again and cursed. "Huh? Why?" Chichi said, looking surprised. "I'm not supposed to be here." Chichi laughed. "You've got over 100 chitim in your purse. Trust me, you're very welcome here." She took Sunny's hand, and they followed Olu and Sasha. There were a few people ahead of them. She stopped. Iroko leaves were falling around her, and as she watched, one of the leaf piles took a humanoid shape. It sloppily cartwheeled over to a man and fell apart, burying the man in its green leaves. As the leaves covered him, the man looked more annoyed than afraid. When the leaf thing took a humanoid shape again, a gun was disappearing into its chest.
"Biko, please," the man begged, holding his hands up and smiling embarrassed. "I forgot I was carrying that."
The leaf person cartwheeled back to its place in front of the tree and was motionless again. Olu and Chichi were snickering.
"Idiot,"
Sasha said in a low voice.
"What's he packing for?"
"I've got more powerful juju in one finger. Grown man probably didn't even make mbakwa."
Sunny looked closely at the leaf person on her left as she passed it. Even up close, it was just a bunch of leaves.
"This is the forefront," Chichi told her. She waved at a boy passing by and slapped hands with him. He wore baggy jeans and sneakers like Sasha, but she could tell he was Nigerian. Something about the way he wore his American-style clothes, but he looked Nigerian too, probably Yoruba.
"Friend of mine," Chichi said.
"Yeah, Chichi's got a lot of friends," Olu said.
"Shut up,"
Chichi said coyly.
"Anyway, so most of these places are shops. That's Sweet Plumes. It's a juju powder shop."
Sweet Plumes was one of the first buildings, a double one-story red mud hut decorated with thousands of tiny white circles that gave it an almost reptilian look. The front door was round and covered with a silver cloth that moved in and out as if the building itself was breathing. As they passed it, she smelled a sulfuric odor like rotten eggs.
"They sell good product, except when you get to the really, really advanced juju. But that's to be expected," Chichi added. "By then, it's best to grind your own."
They passed more shops. Many of them sold normal stuff like clothes, jewelry, computer software, and cell phone accessories. Sunny and Olu waited outside while Chichi and Sasha went into a tobacco shop to buy Banga brand herbal cigarettes.
"They're supposed to be healthier than tobacco cigarettes. Smell nicer too," Olu said with a shrug. "But to me, a cigarette is a cigarette, a nasty habit."
"Agreed," Sunny said. Next, they stopped outside a place called Bola's Store for Books.
"We'll be quick," Chichi said when Olu gave her a look.
They were all hungry.
Chichi took Sunny's heavy purse.
"Come on, Sunny."
It was large and cool inside. In the center, wicker chairs were set up around a wicker coffee table. A woman wearing a big metallic blue head wrap and a matching expensive-looking traditional dress was reading a dusty book. When she turned a page, she ground the book's filth into her lovely clothes a little more. Her hands were covered with the book's dust, too.
"What book is that interesting?"
Sunny wondered. She wanted to see, but Chichi led her in a different direction. There were books written in Hausa, Urdu, Yoruba, Arabic, Efik, German, Igbo, Egyptian hieroglyphs, Sanskrit, even one written in a language Chichi called Insibidi.
Can you read Insibidi?
Sunny asked with a laugh, picking up the book. What kind of name was that? It sounded like a stifled sneeze.
Later, Sunny, Chichi said, taking the book from her and putting it back.
I'm starving. Let's make this quick.
All the people in the store were quiet, reading and browsing with such intensity that she ached to look at some of the books, too. They passed an empty section with a warning posted above it, saying, "Enter and buy at your own risk."
"Here it is,"
Chichi said. They stopped at a shelf marked, "Intros, Outed, Eyes, Opened." She picked up a slim green paperback titled, "Fast Facts for Free Agents."
"Come on," she said. "Aldo is going to spontaneously combust if we don't hurry."
Sunny held her heavy purse as Chichi fished out a copper chitim and handed it to the old man behind the table. He looked at the chitim, reached into his pocket, brought out a pinch of what looked like sand, and rubbed it against the chitim. There was an instant burst of wet mist. It smelled like roses. The man smiled and rubbed his hands in the mist. Chichi did the same. Sunny imitated her and found that her hands came away smelling like roses too.
"Just making sure," the man said. "After so many years, you still don't trust me?" Chichi asked.
"Efik women and girls are the craftiest charlatans," he said. Chichi laughed.
"My father was Igbo, remember, Mohammed?"
"Eh," the man said, handing her the book and 5 shiny silver chitim. To Sunny, these looked much more valuable than the dull copper ones.
"Daughters are their mother's children inevitably,"
he motioned to Sunny.
"The book's for her?" "Yes, this is Sunny," Chichi said, handing her the book.
She put the chitim and the book in her purse and waved shyly at the man. He looked at Sunny for a long time and then said,
"You should take her to my second wife for a divination reading."
"I know," Chichi said.
"Not today, though. Tell your wife to expect us sometime."
"She probably already knows when you'll be coming." They were starving and it was nearly 2 o'clock, so Sasha suggested that they go to Mama Put's putting place. The small outdoor restaurant was quick. It was run by a fat woman named Mama Put, like many Nigerian women who owned food stands. She stood behind a counter collecting money and barking out orders to her employees. Sunny ordered a large plate of jollof rice and roasted spicy chicken and a bottle of orange Fanta. She paid with 1 silver chitim and Mama Put gave her back 6 small gold ones. They sat at a table in the shadiest part of the restaurant. The rice was nicely spicy, the chicken savory. As soon as her stomach was calmed, she said,
"Okay, talk.
I don't care if you spit food or choke while you do it. Just keep explaining."
"Ah!"
Sasha exclaimed, his mouth hanging open. He just tasted his pepper soup.
"Woo-hoo! That's hot. That's hot."
He swallowed and then used his napkin to blow his nose.
"Damn!"
"Good, though?" Olu asked.
"Oh, yeah, really good."
He coughed.
"Wow, gotta get used to the food here. Not even good soul food has anything on this."
"Mama Put uses tainted peppers," Olu said.
"Those are peppers that grow near spill sites, places where they dump out used magical brews," Chichi explained to Sunny. "They're popular in Africa and India."
"Definitely not America," Sasha added. Sunny filed this information away.
"Okay, well, come on. Tell me what you know."
Olu stuffed a large chunk of palm oil-soaked yam into his mouth, then took a bite of his large butter cookie. Sasha, now sweating profusely, dove back into his pepper soup.
Fine, I'll do it, Chichi said, annoyed. I'm the most knowledgeable anyway.
Neither boy argued with her.
Let's start from the start. So there are leopard people. We've always been around, all over the world. In some countries, we're called witches, sorcerers, shamans, wizards, things like that, I guess. So it's not just black people.
Sunny took a deep breath. Okay, I have to ask. Do you all have anything to do with child witches? In some parts of Nigeria, people marked certain children as evil witches. These poor children were blamed for anything that went wrong, from illnesses to accidents to death. Eventually, the community would rise up and enact all kinds of punishment to get rid of their magical powers. Really, it was just a form of child abuse. Sonny had even seen documentaries and movies on child witches.
No, Olu firmly said. We've got absolutely nothing to do with that. That's just some twisted lamb superstition gone very wrong. Those children are just normal, innocent, non-magical kids being scapegoated.
Sonny breathed a sigh of relief.
Anyway, being a leopard person is not genetic, really, Chichi continued. It's spiritual. The spiritual affects the physical. It's complicated. All you need to know is that leopard people tend to keep it in the family, but sometimes it skips and jumps, like with you. It sounds like your grandmother was of leopard spirit. By the way, all this is in that book I just helped you buy, so read it.
Oh, I plan to. Go on.
So Leopard Knox is the main West African headquarters, she said. Sasha, where's the headquarters in the United States?
Sasha smirked.
New York, of course. But I don't consider that place the head of anything. It doesn't represent black folks. We are a minority, I guess. As a matter of fact, everything's biased toward European juju. The African-American headquarters is on the Gullah Islands in South Carolina. We call it Tarnation.
Sunny laughed. Nice name.
We try, Sasha said proudly.
You know how you had to be initiated to come here? Chichi asked.
Yeah?
Well, because we have leopard parents, Olu and I have been able to come here all our lives. We know our spirit faces, so we could cross. We both went through the first level, the initiation, 2 years ago. It's called Ikbiri, she said. Most go through it around 14 or 15.
But I'm 12, Sunny said.
Yeah, you're early, Chichi said. So was Olu.
So was I, Sasha said. I went through it last year. I'm 13.
How old were you, Chichi?
Sunny asked.
She only smiled.
Yet again, she managed to keep her age hidden.
The second level is Mbakwa. You go through that at around 16 and 17. That's when you really start learning the heavy stuff. You have to pass all these tough tests to get in.
I can pass all that right now, Sasha boasted.
Me too, Chichi boasted back. With my eyes closed.
Olu scoffed.
Yeah, well, the rules say you can't yet.
Screw rules, Sasha said. They're made to be broken.
Only when you've mastered them, Olu said quietly.
So, the third level is one that very, very, very few ever pass. That's Indibu. It's like getting a PhD. To pass it, you have to attend a masquerade meeting and get a masquerade's consent. A real masquerade, not a bunch of men and boys all dressed up.
Real one? Sunny asked quietly, as if to speak of them too loudly would call the spirits from their dwelling place in the other world.
Yeah, Chichi said, and that means you have to die in some way or something. I don't really understand it.
So what's the last grade? Sunny asked.
Okuakama. No one knows how you get them. In Nigeria, only 8 living people have reached it. 4 live around Leopard Knox,